with the use of glass, and what is the impact that it has, and why? Why does it change behavior? Because what I learnt very early on was that it certainly did change behavior. Now, I want to just go, it's going to be one of the things that I want to say to you is that I believe when we see really good architecture, we know it. And we know, and we can easily in our lives sense the power of good architecture, whether it's in a church. We understand that good architecture makes a difference. When we see bad architecture, bad urban architecture, we understand it. But it's the mediocrity in the middle that we are very comfortable about living with. And in schools, we live with a phenomenal amount of mediocre architecture, and we sometimes live with that because that's what we went through as students in schools. And so when we go into a really boring learning space, and yet it feels just like the classroom that we grew up in, we think that's okay. We think it's fine, and we are quite happy as school leaders when we're designing that space. If we can save a dollar, we'll save the dollar, because no one's going to criticise us, because when they walk into that ordinary learning space, they will feel it's just like the one they went to school. We won't get under any criticism. But when we design something really good, it's amazing how much we open ourselves politically as leaders to pressure and criticism, because the one that is thrown around most about design space in schools is you're doing it for ego, you're doing it for yourself, it's a trip that you're on, and what's the impact on learning? And the metadata analysis of impacts on learning really don't have a lot of data to say the nature of the learning space makes a difference. I just think intuitively it does. I think, and I would do that simply by observing the boys, and in my present situation, for those who just arrived, you'll see lots of girls in these photos because that's the nature of the school. I think it does make an absolutely observable difference in behaviour. So, when you walk around a building, what does it say? It tells you about stuff. You can walk into any church in the world and you can tell whether it's a Renaissance, a Reformation, you can tell whether it's evangelical, whether it's a high church, low church. You can tell about the theology, the politics, of the nature of the church you're in by the architecture that's in there. You can tell. And you can also tell a lot about the history of a school. You can tell where the power lies. You can tell the attitudes towards the kids. You can tell the attitudes towards the staff. So, when you think about your school, what is your school politically saying by the architecture it has? Now, one of the early pieces of architecture when we started putting glass into schools, this was a common response that I found that people would do when it was left up to political neutrality of leadership. And I put this up to simply raise the question of who controls the space when you start to design space. Now, in this particular case, I have a running battle with the primary school teachers in my school. This isn't my school, this is a previous one that I was head of. And, it's 15 years since I left this place. And what I think is fascinating is who controls it. I think this is controlled by the teachers. And I'm not saying that necessarily to say it's wrong, but there's always an answer. There is always an answer of who controls space. And I think this is controlled by them because they have covered every piece of glass with a poster. Now, they will say because they want to display the children's work. They will tell you significantly of the honouring of the child by the display of the work. But to me, glass is meant to be seen through, and they have covered it, and they have restricted it, and they have blocked. And I think it is a blocking exercise, just as it was when I was at school and I remember the little window in the wooden door. And in 90% of the cases, even as a 15-year-old I counted it, 90% of the cases the teacher would have put a poster over the top of that little glass window to ensure that the boys weren't distracted. Now, I just didn't ever buy that answer. Well, that was to stop someone peeking through the window. So there's always, there's politics surrounding what happens in the space that you see. So, now, one of the things that I love about many new modern designs that I own, I visit a lot of schools, and one of the things I see around is the habit of what I call foyerism. This is the activity of designing magnificently on the outside, but when you go in behind the mesh, you find the standard, you find the old, you could find the 1950s. You just don't find beyond the foyerism. And for, I went to a French school in Bordeaux about 2 years ago. Beautiful, beautiful presence they had. But when we walked down the corridor for the classrooms, it was a corridor. There was no window into anything. The headmaster proudly showed me the key, like a hotel key that he had. And he said, "With this key, I can lock any teacher out of the classroom." And I thought, I wonder what the advantage of that is. You know, if they're late, I can stop them getting in. Wow. Yeah? That's fantastic, isn't it? I mean, I don't know when I'd use it. But the corridor in the class, when we peeked into the classes, there wasn't an ability to see anywhere. Now, you have to start asking questions of what does it do to the people who learn in that space when you are surrounded by the inability to see in or out. Now, the traditional answer that is given in most schools of the Western world is it stops distraction. That's the answer. It aids concentration. That's the answer that is given. That's the historic context of the 19th century when they placed in many schools in Britain, they placed the windows well above head height so that the boys wouldn't be distracted and they would focus on their learning. But we have had a century or two of almost wars in the classroom related to the sense of what it is like to learn in that classroom, and I'll talk more about it. A lot of modernity is based on what I call architecture that's anarchy. Now, this is what pretty much... this is a modern school in Sydney, a school that is on the tour guide. It's not a school, it's not a piece of architecture that I like. And when you go to this, this is actually also what I started teaching in 1977 at a place called Augusta Park. And we had six teachers, six classes, no walls. So I started in the absolute epitome of open space. And it was a truly horrible experience. I could not find a single thing to recommend that experience of six teachers in an open-spaced environment, even though I'm fully aware that many of you may well be designing and building these things at the moment. As a teacher, I did not like it. It deprived me of so much that I wanted to do with the children that I wanted to interact with. It destroyed interaction, but I'll come back to it. I also object to what I call the jelly bean approach to school architecture. As I go on, I'm also going to put a caveat on what I say. These are my opinions. If you don't agree with me, I'm comfortable with that. But what I would like to provoke in you is the understanding that if you disagree with me, you disagree with me because you have a political sense of why and a value set of why. And by all means, that just generates a fantastic conversation. So, also... throughout my career, really, I've been fighting what I call the death of schools movement. That group of people who've said schools are on the wane, they're going out, that we need to reinvent, we need to re-envisage what they are, we need to recreate. And so what they tend to do is to throw out everything that they discover about the traditional school. And a battle ensues between people who get branded as conservatives and those who get branded as progressives. So... the good guys get to side on change, and you get branded as a baddie if you want to retain something that's a little traditional. Very unfair, very silly demarcation of the understanding of education. And it thwarts good conversation about this whole topic. So, what I think is the real life. Some people design their schools by what I call democratic methods. They go out there and they ask everyone, and then the whole summary of it, they create a sense of what the design should be. I have to say I don't do that because I tend to take the attitude as a professional educator. I'm deemed to know something about the nature of education, and therefore I should design something according to the values that I believe in and the politics I believe in. And values and politics are enshrined deeply within architecture of schools. Because the problem is, when you go consulting, what if the people you consult are dills? It's a real problem. And it can't be overlooked. It's a bit like that whole movement on authentic leadership in schools that said we should just be ourselves. What happens if you're not very nice? That's really hard. Right? It's really hard. So, consulting is an interesting phenomenon. Culture of the school. What if the culture of your school is dull? and not what you want. Wow, and you've consulted your way into the next productivity of dull. Wow. So, yeah. Do you build for what you have or what you want? Then the problem for leaders of schools, what if you're building ahead of your cultural understanding of what you want? So if you're building ahead of the culture of your school, that's a way to lose your job. It's good for the next person. So, this is one we built recently. This cleaner's cupboard. We turned a cleaner's cupboard into a nook of conversation. I'll get on to why later, but it's political and it's values. There's nothing in architecture that's not free of those two things, the values you have for the students you teach and the politics you have for power within your school. You've got to take a few risks. I like this quote from Marley Carnegie. We become world experts at risk minimisation and rulemaking. To innovate, you need to be a risk taker and a rule breaker. It's a bit provocative, but I think you also, if you don't like that level of provocation, then just have some values and have some sense of the politics that you're trying to do. Do you want the power to lie fully with the teacher, and therefore it's easy to design a classroom and a learning space? Do you want the power to be spread? Do you not value teachers? Which is, I think, what happens in the full open space movement. I felt utterly powerless as a first year out teacher walking around in these six classrooms. It was impossible to talk to the kids. It was impossible to communicate with the group. We had individual conversations. I was nearly nuts by the end of the first week because you had the same conversation over and over again on what was prized as individual education, but it was actually an abrogation of the teacher's role and responsibility. They paid someone a lot of money to do nothing. And it was an extraordinary experience to go through. But what do you believe in? Okay. What I'm trying to do is go backwards here. Obviously I've got no blood flowing through me at the moment. Ah, this is annoying. And I shall go in the other way. So, how many rules can you break? And yet still design a school that works. But you have to also go, works for what? Works for what set of politics, what set of values? We're a conservative school. We have academically inclined kids. They essentially all turn up in ultimately in a tertiary institution, a tertiary course after school. They come from well-to-do families. We're a conservative school. We're high values. We're an Anglican school. We're relatively traditional. So what can we design? This is the admin entrance. Okay. So the rules we broke. This is what we set out to deliberately do. And you may hate these things, and that's fine. But you have to create your own list of what you believe in. I believe that all rooms in a school should be owned equally by all who sit in the school. When I went to the school, a child could get a detention. I got rid of those. A detention for being in a classroom after class. I always thought that was bizarre. This was the place in which you learnt, but if the teacher wasn't in there, you got a detention for being in the space where you otherwise learnt. I always struggled with that idea. It seemed to me to be a thoroughly off-putting concept. If a child got to the room early in the morning and found it unlocked, and they were in there unsupervised, they got a detention for being in there, for catching up their homework that they'd missed the night before. Wow, you know, I had to process some of that thinking as to why. Privacy. I believe sound protection in a teaching space is valuable. I also believe in openness. And I gave them equality in the design of the space. So sound protection, you need to be able to talk to people. You also need to be able to see what's going on. Why do you want to see what's going on? I'll get to more of that. Third, When you connect people through glass, what's happening between the individual and the group? What is the relationship change that's going on? I'll get to it. And fourth, the formal and the informal mixed together, is that a bad thing or a good thing? I think it's good. I think that we mix a lot in the modern world between our personal and professional. When I first introduced the iPad to the school in 2010, 60-odd days after it came out in America, I was forewarned that the parents were going to ask, would we allow any games, personal things, music, film on the iPad? So I hopped up and said, I'm delighted to let you know that the iPad will be both personal and professional, just like your own phone. And everyone said, oh, that's fine. Isn't that great? Personal and professional. Often you need a language, you need an idea to wrap around the thing that you're doing. So the rules we broke were a whole set of rules about values and politics, the risk we took. Not every teacher would like what I'm about to show you. I knew that. Not every teacher would like to teach in a glass-walled classroom. Did I care or did I not care? Was that important to me or not? What if they were ineffective in that? Now, what I'd learned on the journey of starting off small in the mid-90s on putting glass into rooms is that every time I opened up a room, it got calmer. Every time. With the boys, every time I opened it up, it got calmer. So I kept increasing the size of the glass. And every time, people got happier and happier about being in there. Why? Why was this happening? But it was. So then we put the whole wall, and we let them write on the wall. And this was Friday, so it's Jersey Day. So we have, what you're about to see is we have a centre with 14 glass-walled classrooms. Most of the glass walls go along the front and between the rooms. Double glazed, sealed for sound, but floor to ceiling, and where you see a white door on these rooms to come up, all the glass walls move. Where you see a glass wall, it doesn't, but most of them, 12 of them, have movable glass walls. What does the research say about space in office space? What does industry tell us? It tells us we have a problem in the open space office between me and we. We have a problem in corporate world between the individual's rights and the group, the collaboration and the individuality. Everyone wants the open space for collaboration, but then in the 90s they put cubicles in. Cubicles gave privacy, openness gave collaboration, but the cubicles ruined the collaboration. What it told us was that you can't do both things with the same piece of architecture. If you want to do it properly, you have to have different spaces for different functionality. If you aren't prepared to put different spaces for different functionality, it won't work. What it also said was if you have to walk people huge distances to get the different functionality, you'll destroy the moment. So, did this resonate? Well, it certainly did. I remember the days when we had to walk the students to the video room. And the older ones can remember that. Then they were kind enough to give us the commander system where we could ring the library on a buzzer and get them to, can you stop the video? And, you know, by the time the librarian came back, what? You know, you'd lost the moment, you know. I mean, that bit of history, they'd already attacked the people. And so it was over, you know, it was gone. So you have to have immediacy and you have to have it there. So you need community and you need individuality connected. I wanted privacy and openness connected. I said to the architects, I want everything. I want everything that I value together. They blinked a lot, right? But I wanted it all. So I wanted every value that I valued together. So, again, Harvard Business Review. You can read the slide. It's really interesting. what industry is saying. Industry is saying much the same sorts of things as we are saying in schools. That the pure openness doesn't work. Closed doesn't work. Somehow connecting the two does work, but how do you do it? This building, by the way, was a truly ugly piece of work. It was everything that you would not design. So every photo you're looking at comes from the renovation of a truly ugly space. Bricks, blocked, closed in, windy, windswept corridors. We picked the worst building to do this to. And we opened it up. So there's a breakout space larger than this room, surrounded by seven glass-walled classrooms. That's looking into one of them from the open space. As I say, the breakout space would be about 1.5 times this room. And this is the point. When you design space, you can design space for a purpose, or you can design space for many purposes. But if you design space disconnected, it's not many purposes, it's just disconnected space. So connection matters, but then you add up what else you value. And as I said, I valued space that a teacher can talk to kids. I value individual space where kids can get and do small group. I value space that they can get away and have a nook. I value couches, I value everything really. This is the library. I wanted to be able to see it. It always annoyed me that I had to book the library as a teacher. That just bugged me. It annoyed me the walk to the library. The dysfunctionality that happened to my happy class as I walked to the library was always a fascination to me. How could they turn from happy kids in my room to the walk to the library destroyed their connection. And all of a sudden, mischief emerged where mischief hadn't been there. So what I wanted was a library and a classroom where I didn't have to walk. So we put seven glass-walled classrooms around the library. You can see them in the background. So that I didn't have to walk. I didn't want to have to sit in a library that was different. I wanted to sit in my classroom and get the book out of the library, which was essentially the classroom. So, I didn't want books that blocked me in. I didn't want privacy in that particular case, yet I did want quiet spaces. This is outside the seven classrooms. Space outside the seven classrooms. You can see it's quite substantial. We gave the designers two rules. It had to be areas where small groups could work, large groups could work outside the classroom. We wanted community outside the room. We wanted individuality outside of the room, the ends. I said, everything I value, I wanted it. So we told them we wanted it designed to Apple Madmen. So that's our Apple lab. And if you've seen the Apple, the Madmen television series, you'll see that we also asked for Madmen. There's the couches, because I love the furniture in the Mad Men series. Seems to me to be comfortably elegant. We didn't put the scotch bottle anywhere. And so the kids, this particular teacher, likes teaching in the open space. So he has his class in the open space. He's the only one who does it. He heads a learning institute, which is designed to film our curriculum and give it away. But he does this because he likes the variety of spaces. These kids in the first picture were working while he was talking to them. Second, they're doing their individual work. Something should happen here. Oh, it is. No, that's not what should happen. There should be a film embedded there. Oh. There was music to this. I actually said to some of the Year 11s, would they tell me what they thought of the building? And so they made this short film for me. There's some nice little clips, but unfortunately the sound's not working. So you won't hear the pearls of wisdom that they came out with. It's very interesting to hear what they said about it. So again, we wanted group. You can see through to the classroom. Group areas. We wanted space that teachers. I believe teachers have a right to talk to their kids. I believe they have a right to do that in a soundproof area. But where do the kids go when they finish the class? How do they get to the next learning experience? Is it a dysfunctional walk that upsets the rhythm, or is it an enhancing moment as they go from one space to the other? I didn't want to lose the moment. I didn't want to have, you can work outside where the teacher couldn't also see. So you can see all those classes, the kids can see, and the teachers can see. The kids use this for their study period. We got rid of the Year 12 common room area, that den of iniquity that everyone regrets going into 20 or 30 years ago, because we lose the kids from our schools. They disappear into some smelly little dive in the school and don't re-emerge until graduation. All of these things are dangers to our school, so we got rid of it in a way which is, you'll see in a moment. And we placed space that they could work in different ways. You can see into the classrooms. Theoretically, this should work too. Oh. Now, in the classrooms, we put what we call the W. This was a design issue, and everyone finds their own solution to this problem. To me, the desks in a classroom are political. I've gone through straight line, laser line desks with a teacher desk at the front. Many of you have probably seen these schools. I didn't like it. But what do you do as an alternative? I'd gone round the group little nests. I'd bought in different shaped tables. And all I could feel was the pain of each of the experiments. None of them quite worked. I didn't like the laser line desks. It felt like World War I. I didn't like the nests of tables. They were political. Who sat where? Why did they sit there? Well, wasn't a chair for their best friend? Did the teacher allocate it? Did the children get permission to determine who sat where? Who controlled the seating arrangement? Could they move after Easter? I've gone through all the movements, I think, of how it could be worked out. But personally, and this is why I mean design is a personal experience, I like the W. I like the W because, and I didn't give teachers a teacher desk because they could walk around if they didn't have a desk. And when you stand in the centre of the first U, you're hardly any distance at all from any other child. I made the bend on the U, you can't use it for anything else but the bend on the U. It's a useless desk for any other purpose than the one it's designed for, so people leave it where it is. And it just, to me, it just works for most teachers. It gets people into, it's a bit like the going around, I won't mention the American school, but I said to them, why do they have desks in circles? Because we value conversation. What a lovely idea. Yeah, say again. We can seat 22 in those, although rarely do we have them that big. They're more about the 18, 20, at max, often around 15. So we, you'll see also in the back of that classroom, guys at the back will struggle a bit, couch area. We placed a couch area in the back of most of the rooms with a little circular desk in there. Now, that was odd. A lot of the kids thought it was quirky, a lot of the teachers thought it was wacky. Using it, they love it because it's a conference area, it's a discussion space. There's a group in operation, whoops, and there's the desk at the back. It works exceptionally well for conversation. And this is about what I mean by the ends. I took every single thing I valued and said I wanted it all. Now, all of you will have things you want, I hope. You may just want, as has been said to me, you may just want a laser-lined up set of desks. I don't. Why do I think it works? Let me just start exploring that idea. This idea, just watch this, hopefully. Oh, this is actually a breakout room from one of the things. It's our train carriage, we actually call it. And the kids rather like it. It breaks out, as you can see, from one of the classrooms. It's also outside the recharge station where they can get hot water, fill up a cup of tea, take it into. They can write on any of the windows. They can take a cup of tea in. If they take their phone in, they just place it on the table. If their mother is going to call them, just tell the teacher, I'm expecting, can't ignore phone call. Hardly ever happens, but it takes the pain out of the whole mobile phone issue. We just don't have a problem with it. I'd have to say we don't have a problem with discipline either. One of the things that the staff have noticed about this building is how quiet it is and how well behaved they are. We never had a lot of problems. I have to say we've now been using this building for a term. We have not had a single, and I mean this, we have not had a single disciplinary moment using 14 classrooms for the term. Not a single thing can our head of senior school or any of the teachers I asked identify. It's pretty good. That's one of the cleanest cupboards. Obviously converted. I've seen up to 8 in there. They're really designed for 4, but they do cram it. A couple of year 11s. So, why does it work? What happens in the standard classroom, I think, and this is my theory, test it out in your own mind. I think when you are blocked into a room that you can't see out of, I think what happens is that if you get bored, you get distracted by the person next to you. The only distraction, the only break you can have mentally from what is going on is to take it out on the person next to you. Some of you may have noticed this in a classroom where, someone just, they've tried to listen, they've not done a bad job, but they just need a break. And that break, the only option they've got, when they can't visually see anything, when they can't avoid, they can't have a moment to ponder. Right now, you can look out that window and see the Oval and wish you were listening, watching a footy match out there. Wouldn't the rugby be great here? Wouldn't it be nice to actually be served from that bar up there? You can look around and you can dream. But when you're in a classroom that has walls up to the ceiling, you can dream about nothing. So the only thing you can do is to take it out on that poor sod next to you. And you do. You accept your obligation. So, whereas when you are not surrounded by it, do the girls or boys behave well because they're being observed through there? Or do they behave well because they feel comfortable in there? I think it's the second. I think the early feelings that we used to say in the 90s when we were saying, why does glass work? Which was, they can be observed. I don't think that's it. These kids don't seem to be at all fussed by being observed, nor do the teachers. But it does keep the teachers on task. I admit that. It does mean I don't see feet on desks. I don't see them plonked in the chair doing nothing. I do see a lot more activity around the classroom, and I do see a lot more conversation. So does it change behaviour? Yeah, I think it does. I think it does. So, how close is the library? Very close. So what did I get? How many ends did I get of that? That's the recharge station where they can get... We do a lot of tours. We often just set morning or afternoon tea up there and we'll stand around as a group of visitors, just standing there drinking our cup of tea, looking in the classroom, and the kids don't pay the slightest bit of attention to us. They're private and public. They're visible and they have sound protection. They're in a closed space, but they have a community space there as well. In the closed space, they have a nook for conversation and a place for public conversation. We got everything into each space, was the basic philosophy. At the end of the lesson, no one can kick a kid out of a classroom. At the end of the day, it's now childcare, free of charge. Kids just hang around till 6 when we close the building, and we're opening it next term to late. So they can stay in there. They go in, if they've got a Netflix account, they open one of the tellies and they sign on and they kill a bit of time. No one kicks them out. No one what's the politics of that? There is politics behind it. What are the values that sit there? There's values that sit behind it. You may not like it, and I don't mind if you don't like what I've just said. It works for us. We don't happen to, we have a school without discipline problems, and that might not appeal to you. It might put someone out of a job, right? We don't have detentions. I don't have anyone yelling. I won't have anyone yell at anyone. We don't speak with a loud voice. This is as loud as it ever gets. So, and we have mutuality of respect. No one's rude to anyone else. No one, ever. I say, I don't want strong discipline, I want no discipline. Now you can decide whether that's strong or weak. You can decide whether I'm a wimp or that's actually the creation of a good valued culture. I wanted the architecture to enhance what I've wanted and valued. Then in the ground floor we built a cafeteria. I can't show you a lot of the cafeteria other than around the corner there where the cafeteria continues is the Year 12 common room area. This is the building. This building was ugly, truly, truly ugly. It was an L-shaped building. We're on the looking in towards the guts of the L at the moment. And what we did, we dropped two concrete floors out there and then I covered all the ugly things with mesh. Or fins. So any ugly surface I covered up. This next one, we put a stage in. They like to perform. We put a DJ booth in the far corner because we're encouraging the voice of the girls. How to encourage the voice of the girls? Get them to run a radio station. They'll love it. What's happened? Their microphone skills, their articulation, their eloquence. It's gone through the roof. But eloquence, voice is also political. If you kick them out of a classroom because what are you doing there, how are they going to talk to you or raise their voice about a concern that they have? How comfortable will they be? But if we value them to go in there and occupy a space without asking permission, are they more likely or less likely to express their opinion to us? No raised voices, no permissions, no politics, just values and decency and respect. Year 12 area works stunningly well. That's the outside of the building. It just used to be a brick wall on an L shape. So we cut a hole in there, covered it up with a bit of concrete cover and a bit of a mesh, because I like the Audi showrooms. You know those Audi where they sell those nice cars I can't afford? Well, I love those things because they look like incredibly cheap buildings covered with a lovely mesh. And so we had a really ugly building, so I covered it with that steel mesh. And that meant I didn't have to look at ugliness. And you can see how it works. Architecture, I guess, is political. I'm going to move through this, see if I can. I won't show you the full film. So the heart of the journey. Connected space, openness, space differentiation, connected people, equality of ownership, teacher, but I don't think I would reject that I'm anti-teacher. Because I'm pro-student, I reject that I'm anti-teacher. Remember, I want it all. I wanted teachers to have a space they could have and teach in. I just wanted that space to be open and connected. I wanted the kids to feel comfortable in there and the teachers. How many values do you value when you design a space? Or do you just take the easy, mediocre architecture, won't get you into trouble, just line up the desks, get on with it, stick a wall on there, get the cheapest quote. and what values are you putting into place? You're probably designing a perfect 1950s school. That's my opinion. You may feel different and you feel quite angered by what I've said. But I guess I've said enough. Do we have any questions, curiosity? Yeah. We have them here. We get asked that question a lot. It's too soon in the process to know. We haven't found anything we don't like. We still value that the response of the girls has been so strong. What did they love most? They loved the odd things, the quirky things that we did for them. They loved the fact that we turned cleaners' cupboards into nooks. They loved the couches in the back of the room. They loved the fact that we let them write on the glass. They loved the fact that we have couches just outside the classroom. They loved the fact that the connected space is so natural and integrated because they just kept saying, you did this for us. They kept saying, and the issue in the first instance was, are we allowed in that space? They kept asking to check. You're saying, we're allowed in there without permission, yeah? So we don't have to ask. That's what without permission means, yeah. And they said, so if we're kicked out, well, you'd tell us, wouldn't you? And you'd object to that? Why wouldn't you object to something that we're trying to allow you to do? And they took to it so... We haven't had a single piece of graffiti. They write on the glass. It's fascinating. Other questions? Yeah.
You were very intentional about not putting teacher desks in the classrooms. One of the issues that I'm going to be considering going forward is, what do I do with the teachers? Do you have them by department? Do you have them in
This building is largely occupied by the history, the English, and the maths department, actually. They're the ones who occupy it. I put the English and history in there because they mainly use the library, and I want a proximity to the library. For those, the maths department is a high-performing department. I pop them in there really because they showcase excellence in teaching methodology. So
they have their own department room.
Yeah. Yes, roughly. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Reading in your blurb in the schedule about your development of a STEM institute at St Hilda's. Could you tell us a little bit about that and maybe how that relates to the architecture that you've showed us there?
The STEM Institute was obviously, and we were about to add the art in, so we are going to go in the STEAM concept. But we wanted to make certain that in a girls' environment that this was highly valued. We wanted them to find a pathway through, because often people with an interest in the maths and science can't isolate where and what and how it actually connects up. So we wanted to identify the pathway. We wanted to show them that STEM was an opportunity to connect to the wider world. So, for example, we've got five girls at the moment at Smith College in the US at a summer school. So we wanted them to see the international opportunities of this set of subject choices. So it was a case of opening up their vision to how to put it together while at school, while also connecting it to the wider world outside of school. And that was connected to our St Hilda's Learning Institute, which, as I said, is our way of filming our curriculum. We use the iTunes U format. We have 120 courses up there on the iTunes U format at the moment. We often get number one in the world on the searches, and the staff always take screen captures on that. And we have a $2 trophy that gets around, and they take photos and stuff. It's about openness. It's professional development is the issue. Yep. Yes.
I just said that it's clear that Peter has created a strong social learning space for the girls in his care. My question, and also what I noticed, is that it also caters for real difference of personalities within those learning spaces, depending on the type of student the young girl is. Can you talk a little bit about any resistance that you may have encountered from the educators? Because I know you were saying before that people are thinking you're pro-students, but I get a sense you're pro-learning, which teachers and students both have to buy into.
Look, not absolutely everyone loved it. I had a couple of quirky rules in the space. One was an objection to posters, and I guess that's because I'm old enough to have gone through the Stark classroom to the fully posted up classroom, and then the posters get left for four decades and the blue tack pulls the paint off the wall and the poster gets torn and ripped and no one reads it and it just becomes fog in the brain. Not everyone loved that. One teacher really protested, the issue of the no teacher desk. I bought her a stool, a little swivel stool, very cool and trendy, and she loves it. That was about it. There was some angst, but once they got through the angst, if you're teaching in an environment where the kids simply don't misbehave, it's very few teachers will object to that. You know, well, I stood with a group of visitors recently, and we were looking at seven of the rooms, all occupied, and I said to them, point out the child who's not on task. And they smiled and said, I cannot see. You know, I could see into all seven rooms, and I could not see a single child not on task. On task. So it is architecture. Well, we didn't have that before. We could not have claimed that even remotely before. These same impacts happened with boys. When I put I pulled out at Knox in Sydney, they had corridors that they said were Oxford-like. I don't know what they were thinking of or whether they'd ever been to Oxford. They were very thin corridors with bricks up the wall, and the bricks were meant to symbolise an Oxford college. And I'm sorry for anyone who actually went to Oxford and thinks that's derogatory, because it is. But I pulled the walls out, floor to ceiling. Well, us thinking it looks like Oxford's derogatory, isn't it? That's what I mean. But we pulled the wall out, floor to ceiling, wall to wall, and put a glass wall between it. I put two of the most conservative maths teachers, A-grade rugby coaches, get the picture, 6'2", one was South African. You got the image, haven't you? And I put them into these classrooms, and 2 weeks later, they stopped me in the corridor and said, and they had a door between it, glass door. So they had glass wall between the classroom, glass wall down the corridor. And they stopped me and they said, this is the best thing we've ever experienced. We feel connected. They said, did you know that when we have a concern, we can actually ask the other maths teacher? They said, do you know how good that is? You know, I just smiled. When I did it at Trinity Melbourne, I bought a building called the Q Municipal Council Offices. The ground floor was a dungeon. It was a horrible space. It was almost impossible. I was going to put the music department down there, but I was faced with this enormous dungeon-like environment. So I just glazed the whole thing and put 12-volt lighting so it had a brilliance of lighting. Every time the music department used to see it, they would draw walls in. And every time they walked out of the office, I took them out. So that when they got into the building, not knowing what they were getting, they walked down and they found glass walls everywhere. And they said, this is just what we wanted. Because it works. We were soundproof. Sound, because I think you've got to respect people's desire for that. Other questions? Yeah.
I have a question about the aspect of culture. I noticed that all the students are very engaged. They're very engaged at their desks, but they don't seem to have any bags or books or anything.
They keep those in the locker. They just carry the books for the class.
Okay. In terms of your day plan, do you have time between lessons for them to...
Yes, 5 minutes.
Thank you.
We didn't want to build a locker room either. There are other things that I dislike, so we took an old road, converted it into it's a bit like, I call it the light rail station, because it looks a bit like a train station, but it's nice. And then to stop that feeling like the horror of a locker area, we put lots of chairs and tables in a higgledy-piggledy way around the outside, so we turned it into a sociable space. So that because again we use the philosophy of, okay, you get your books and you can have a conversation. So the word and became, how many values can we get into the same space? Became how many interconnections can we get? So rather than have a long walkway, we have places you can sit and take a break and have a conversation in the space, getting to the space that you want to go to. So everything had a functionality.
Yes, thank you. In your research and architecture, did you come across any findings about colour on the walls that you do have?
Look, I've seen that, yeah. I'd have to say, yes, we came across it, and I have to admit to ignoring it. As I said, the architect wanted to put a different colour chair into every room, and in the end, I just couldn't do it. So we put black chairs, white tables, and it looks corporate, and the kids say it looks like a university or a corporate headquarters. I couldn't come at the learning theory. It's a bit guilty about this, that sort of says you concentrate best if you're looking at whatever colour. Never worked for me. I just feel good in a nice space. The girls say they feel honoured by the space. That's the word they use repeatedly across classes. Honoured.
So. Peter, sorry.
In relation to the rest of the campus, yeah. If you transform one building, what's the contrast with the behaviour in the other buildings where the students are still going?
The other good building we had is now the very sad cousin. And it's been interesting. I've been at the school 10 years. I started developing and modernising the junior school first, and I moved across the campus from junior school up to, this is the senior school centre. The junior school staff have now said to me, what about us? You know, they said, you know, when do we get a chance? And I remind them I did theirs 9 years ago. But I also say to them, over that 9 years, we've come on a journey in our attitudes of conversation about education and what it means. If I'd done to the junior school what I've done to this 9 years ago, I wouldn't have got away with it. I had to bring them on a journey. Now they're demanding this across there. So there isn't. I have unsettled other parts of the campus that don't have this facility. No doubts at all. They've created a demand, a need, a requirement. Isn't that great? You know, I remember my economics lecturer that said, you know, the best sense of creating demand is a queue. I've created a queue of demand for this change that I would want, but I couldn't have sold until I did one. So there's a few ironies.
Okay, Peter, my question may be a little lengthy and maybe very my school specific, but I request everyone to please bear with me because I don't want to miss this opportunity. We are completely bringing down our academic block to the ground and rebuilding it. So the approach that I have taken was a democratic approach, asking everyone for inputs.
Yeah.
I now want to move to the design approach. I'm not as well informed as you are, but I'm taking a clue from what Bruce told us on the first day, and he said, if you can't understand, just ask Google how. So for me, you seem to be the Google on this. So if I want to ask you how to begin this deem the design thinking process in the school, for some others here it may have relevance if they want to do one part of their building and redo it. How do we just begin to take them on this journey?
Can I say that the answer to that is about the values you have towards education? And that's why I say that people will disagree with me, because I have an opinion about how kids should be treated. Last year I spent some time at Harvard with Robert Selman. Psychiatrist originally, now significant educator, just retired. And he boiled education down to one thing. After 40 years of studying and researching, he said, most effective education is kindness. Now, I buy that. Now, I buy that so strongly that you've got to believe in something, because your architecture will come out of your beliefs. You know, why I have a physiological response when I see the desks lined up. I get why people do it, and people have said to me they couldn't do this in their school because it's not their culture. I get that. And then I say, well, what is your culture? And they say, well, our culture, you know, and I've heard this from boys' schools where they'll say our culture is the culture of dating young men. And evidently they feel young men can't handle this. I don't buy that. Others do. So they want to line the boys up so that their behaviour will be right and the monitoring can be fair and equitable. I don't buy that argument. So where do you start? You have to start with defining your values, because it's a building is political and it's value laden. There's no escape from it. So if you don't know what you value in the classroom, I did not like the death of schools that said we have to rip out all the walls. I don't swallow it. I tried that once, 12 months, it was agonising. I thought it was a complete and absolute and utter failure. I don't buy the anarchy approach to education. That's a value that I feel that others won't. I get that. So it is a case if you start with the values you have for education and then you design from there. And don't think any design is value-free. No design is value-free. You build an old 1950s classroom, you've built what you've built. There are values in it. Okay.
Thank you, Peter. I mean, I'm sure you're all absolutely as blown away by that talk as I am, and I'd like to ask for a round of applause, please.
Thanks for that, Sarah. Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
That's good. Thank you. Thanks for the invitation. Thanks, everyone. Gee, I did appreciate it. I don't want you to think that.